Tantra Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Wonder by Christina C. Jones, narrated by Wesley Chavon and Sean Crisden. 1. Allie. I need you to handle Ruby for me today. I nearly choked on my coffee. Half of my daily 4-ounce ration spilled down my throat in a sudden, wasteful gulp. Usually, I spent my 10-minute break savoring it in careful sips, suppressing the desire to lick the tiny ceramic mug at the end, so as to not waste a single drop. I glared at Harriet, who groaned and then moved over to the coffee machine, plugging in her employee code to dispense her serving of brew. With a huff, she poured half into my mug, replenishing it. There. Now seriously, Allie, please. Harriet wasn't one to ask for favors. That whole, I owe you one thing, could be dangerous nowadays, even for something as innocuous as this. You never knew what you'd be asked to do, or what trouble you might get into for doing someone a solid. I knew Harriet well enough to understand that if she was asking, it had to be serious. But still, Ruby? As in your absolute hardest to please client? I don't think so. Nessa is sick. Harriet glanced around, making sure we were alone in the break room before she stepped closer, lowering her voice. I have a hookup, someone who can get antibiotics for me, but I have to go now. I can't miss this opportunity. She was telling the truth. Even if it wasn't clear in her big gray eyes, I knew how it worked around here. The doctor was expensive, if you could get an appointment, and it meant missing work, missing school, for who knew how long. Then you'd be prescribed medicine you may or may not afford, and even if you could afford it, meds were in high demand. If you were lucky enough to purchase what you needed, there was still the unlucky chance of getting knocked upside the head and robbed, leaving the pharmacy. Sickness was dangerous, in more ways than one. But Nessa was still so small, only 7 years old, born just before pregnancy became a luxury only the rich could afford. And the Division 3 sterilization program posters went up all over the city. Well, not this part of the city. The other parts. Harriet would do anything for her little girl, even risk a shady deal for black market antibiotics. Honestly, I wanted to help her, but if I mess it up, you won't, Harriet insisted. Allie, you're the only person I trust to ask this. But you know what will happen if I don't get somebody to cover for me. I did. And getting fired would be the blow that banished Harriet's family from the relative comfort and safety of where we lived to another area. You can have my coffee for 2 weeks, Harriet offered. Tempting. And I'll clean your station for you for the same 2 weeks. No complaints, I swear. A smirk danced at the corners of my mouth until I gave in for a full-blown smile. Fine, Harriet, I'll do it. You don't have to clean my station, but I will take your coffee. And if I get fired, you won't. She propped a hand on one hip. You will absolutely kill it. And get a big enough tip to buy a dress and dance in the Apex, like other girls your age. She said that like my age wasn't 25, like I didn't have more pressing matters than dresses and dancing, even though I didn't have a family like her. I knew she meant well, though. Or I can put more money on Grand's account, I reminded her. It won't be much, but every little bit helps. Every little bit meant a little less debt, meant a little closer to the impossibility of not owing anyone anything. A dream, but one that had my singular focus. Harriet put a hand to her mouth. Oh, Allie, I'm sorry. I didn't consider that, she admitted, pulling me into a hug. Her vanilla-scented sheets of thick brown hair tickled my skin as she squeezed and stepped back. But it makes my point even more. You're doing this for your gran. I'm doing this for Nessa. and neither of us will fail. The distinct click of boots against the cold tile floor made us step further apart, and I snatched up my mug, swallowing my tepid coffee in one swallow. My break was over. Lori's beaky nose appeared around the corner to the break room before she did, wearing her usual half scowl. Her thin blonde hair was, as always, slicked back into a perfect knot, exaggerating her already bird-like features. That nose. Those beady, crafty eyes. Allison will take Ruby for me this afternoon. Harriet spoke before Lori complained, which she'd undoubtedly come to do. I have a personal matter to attend to. Lori's nose rose in the air. We should handle personal matters on personal time. Yes, and typically I would, but I do not care. Lori raised a hand for silence, cutting her off. Allison, you understand how important Ruby Hartford's patronage is to us, correct? I nodded. I do. Those beady eyes gave me a slow once-over. But she didn't comment on my appearance, which was an approval. Good. Don't fuck it up. Lori turned on her high-heeled boots and stalked away as Harriet and I exchanged a look. On that note, I have to get out of here before I miss this meetup, she said. Ruby will be here in 20 minutes. Don't make her wait. Duh, I countered, disposing of my mug and the sack with the others. Now go, don't be late. I have work to do. Once Harriet left, I went the opposite direction toward the floor. I needed time to set up the private booth where I'd service Ruby. But I took a moment to check my appearance in the mirror first, to make sure it was just so. Black shoes, black pants, black logo top, hot pink lip, no jewelry. That was our uniform here, and deviation would earn you a demerit at best, and at worst, fired on the spot. We could do whatever we wanted with our hair. It was encouraged, the more intricate slash interesting the better. I always had braids. Now I pulled them all over one shoulder, taking comfort in their familiar swing against my hip as I moved to my station. It was fortifying, a concrete feeling to connect to in a moment that was feeling more and more surreal. My hands were going in Ruby Hartford's hair today. I was great at my job. You had to be in a place like this. Working at a salon in the Apex meant a wage where you could do more than keeping yourself alive. Another high commodity. As much as the world had changed, the obsession with beauty had not. But that was no complaint. Though I'd hated growing up in a salon, spending long days at my mother's feet on the weekends, inhaling the odors of chemical straighteners and acetone, I was grateful now. I was grateful then too, but as an adult, I had a better understanding of why she taught me formulations with painstaking precision, made sure I had an eagle eye for split ends, perfect braiding techniques, everything I could need to know to wear the title of stylist. She knew it could keep me alive after she was gone. I'd watched Harriet's prep work for Ruby enough times to know what I needed to gather, but I still smiled when I saw the note she'd left. Sure of yourself, are you? I muttered to myself as I grabbed a basket from my station to head to the repository. There, I handed the masked attendant a list of what I needed, and was careful to double-check before I signed the slip to leave with the basket. Back at my station, I took my time to arrange everything the way I liked it, and then, with 1 minute to spare before my appointment, I was done. Ruby Hartford walked in 30 seconds later. Security guards flanked her, which wasn't uncommon for the ultra-wealthy residents of the Apex. Violent crime was virtually non-existent here, but being able to afford your own security was a status symbol. Not that Ruby needed men in black uniforms and heavy boots for us to understand how wealthy she was. She oozed it. Like me, Ruby was dressed in all black. Unlike me, her blacks were all lush, luxury fabrics, skin-tight black leggings, and a cropped tank. Topped with a cashmere kimono, she shrugged off, tossing toward one of the security guards in a fluid motion that had to be rehearsed, with how seamlessly he collected it before it hit the floor. Ruby walked, well, more like glided up, stopping to give me a once-over similar to the one Lori had given earlier. There was no disapproval in her gaze, though, just a mild interest that made my cheeks go hot before her eyes, emerald orbs framed by long, delicate lashes came back to my face. Up close, her caramel skin was just as flawless as it seemed from a distance, sprinkled over with the dark brown freckles. "You're beautiful," she said, in a way that didn't exactly feel like a compliment. "Why are you here instead of working as a diamond?" I swallowed hard, then couldn't do anything other than shrug. This is what my mother taught me to do," I answered. Somehow, that amused her. "Right. The passing of knowledge. It wouldn't do for a hairdresser to have taught you to be a whore, would it?" My eyes went wide. "I suppose not." "Of course you do. You're the one serving as Harriet's replacement today." She wasn't asking a question, she was telling me, and took the empty seat in my salon chair to deepen the point. "Don't fuck it up." Yeah, I'd already heard that one. Fucking up wasn't typically a part of my day, and I had every intention of keeping up that streak. Ruby Hartford had nearly 3 feet of natural coils that she expected colored, blow-dried, and styled to perfection. And I did that. Carefully. I was the picture of professionalism, bringing her dark roots to match the cinnamon tone of the rest of her hair, then drying and styling it into her signature beachy waves. While I worked, she conducted a few business calls I paid no attention to. I wasn't curious about anything except hair when I had a client in front of me. The only thing that registered interest was a heart-shaped birthmark behind her ear, and I quickly pushed even that from my mind as I curled and combed and laid every strand in the perfect place. When I finished, Ruby surveyed her appearance in the mirror, accepting the comb I handed her to part through various sections to check the color. When she finished, she sat back, sounding slightly disappointed when she complimented me on a job well done. My face must have registered confusion because her lips quirked into a smile. "I haven't ruined anyone's life yet today," she explained. "I was hoping you'd give me a reason, but this is flawless. I may come back to you next time, instead of Harriet." "No," I stammered. "You're Harriet's client. I couldn't be telling me no." Ruby spoke over me, still wearing that smirk that made an insidious feeling creep up my back. "You're right. You couldn't be doing that." She made a gesture for me to remove the styling cape, so I did, keeping my lips pressed closed. I wanted to say something ugly, wanted to chew her out, but I couldn't risk my job, my livelihood, on having the last word with a client, so I swallowed it. Once she was back on her feet, towering over me in her heels, she gave me her attention again. "I'd like you to think about what I said earlier," she told me, as she held out her arms for one of the guards to put that kimono back on her. "Girl like you can make good money, much more than the scraps here." "Isn't that right, Alonzo?" she asked one guard. He remained stone-faced, his presence only made more imposing by the tattoo on his face, a trio of spades at the corner of his eye. When he didn't answer, Ruby laughed, then snapped her fingers. It happened so fast I couldn't tell where it came from, but suddenly there was a thick fold of money between her fingers. She peeled off much more than her service cost and handed it to me. walking off before I could realize the error. I tried to catch her, but the guard who'd taken the position closest to her gave me a look so petrifying that I shut my mouth, stuffing the money in my pocket and considering it a blessing. They were few and far between around here. 2. Allie. It started with heat waves. At least that was what my father's grandparents said. My mother said the ice was first, biting and slick under the wheels of cars belonging to people for whom freezing rain was a foreign concept. It didn't matter, though, because none of them were here now, and no matter where it started, it had evolved, devolved. The heat got so bad it was dangerous to be outside, and when it was the right time of the year, the weight of the ice brought down power lines and cracked windows. The beaches were empty because of the smell. If the sea life didn't wash up already cooked from the water, it died on scorching sand. Frost killed the palm trees. And in between that, there was rain. Torrential downpours dumping unholy amounts of water, flooding the streets and washing away the soil and soaking so deep into the earth it disrupted concrete building foundations. The lightning was indiscriminate, destroying homes and blowing past precautionary insulation to cause power surges and blackouts that fried everything from air traffic control systems to home microwaves. And the thunder? So loud you'd feel it for days. So loud that the government sent out mobile units to provide ear protection, the same insulated earmuffs you'd get at a gun range. So loud that fault lines moved. The ones that hadn't moved in years and years, the ones our books said were dormant. The earth was tired of us destroying her and had struck first. A patriot wasn't supposed to think this way, let alone say it out loud. But she'd won. All our science and technology and politics had meant nothing once she decided she wanted us off. That we'd done too much and gone too far. 3/4 of the world's population. Gone. It wasn't what ended up in the sleek books they gave us at school now. 100 years later. As the earth remapped itself, so had history. Both guided by the hand of those who'd been cunning and self-serving and evil enough to negotiate power from an extinction-level event. Not that I was into all that. I didn't care who was in power because they were all the same. They didn't bother with the sham elections anymore. Why, when there were barely states anymore? There were divisions now. 10. Separated by guarded walls I'd never been to and didn't care to see. I wanted to keep my head down and stay alive. That was exactly what I did as I approached the gates that separated the apex from the mids, what we called the section of our city that lay between the spotless, lush environment of the apex, where the wealthy lived, and the lawless boroughs. Even in the mids, the further you got from the apex, the more likely you were to get robbed, assaulted, killed, or worse. Especially a woman traveling alone as the sun disappeared from the sky. The APF, America's police force, were prowling around, sure, allegedly to help keep us safe, but I knew better. Knew the uniform meant nothing if the person wearing it was a criminal, too. Honestly, it was hard to know who to trust these days. That was why I was careful to tuck my thumb over the house number and street name when I showed the guard my ID to get through the gate that would lead me home. A few years ago, one of them had flirted with me, had gotten angry when I declined his advances. A day or so later, he was waiting across the street from my home. Luckily, my father had preached diligence enough that I spotted him before he saw me. I snuck around through the back and watched him through a crack in the blinds as he waited, and waited, and then left. They found his body the next day. The streets were dangerous for everybody at night. Once I got through the gate, I breathed out a sigh. Even with its flaws, the Mids were home, the only one I'd ever known. In some ways, it was relieving to be back on this side of the gate where I belonged, away from the glossy facade of the Apex. Mostly, though, my slow, deep sigh was resigned. The world had ended, rebooted itself, and this was what we got. It was ungrateful of me to view the palm trees and balmy weather with such disdain, but I chalked it up to cabin fever. Anybody would be sick of the same thing every day, would want something more than what they've always known, right? Division 2 got lots of rain and ice, sometimes snow, a phenomenon I'd only ever seen in pictures. Here, sometimes it rained. Often that rain smelled like death, and the Apex would all but shut down because their delicate noses couldn't handle the stench. I loved those days. Got to sip my coffee ration slower, watching the toxic rain streak down the windows. Other times, though, the rain came with storms. I didn't love those. Those were terrifying messes of destructive lightning and sonorous thunder and sheets of rain that made you wonder if yet another reckoning was coming. Before she passed, I remembered my father's mother fussing that back when she was my age, they didn't have to worry about being wiped out by a thunderstorm, that they were common occurrences that rarely had the potential to remap the earth. I always bit my tongue. Instead of reminding her, they should have worried. They should have worried a lot. But now, here we were. Unpredictably destructive weather, drastically different climates, all packed onto what was left after the world decided to try to take us out, just trying to live. I moved before one of the guards noticed I'd been standing there too long and decided I was suspicious. I had errands before I got home and dinner to make once I arrived, and had already spent too much time daydreaming. My first stop was the specialty dry cleaner I couldn't afford to not be able to afford. The salon's strict dress code even included the shade. No faded, off black. Inky, pure black, always. Or you'd be sent home without your wages, which wasn't an option for most of us. So I paid what I had to for another week of work clothes to keep the job that kept me alive. With that bundle draped over my arm, I headed for the market. My heart clenched at the sight of the armed guards that flanked the doors, demanding ID from anyone who wanted to enter. I pulled my same address hiding trick here, and they waved me inside with barely a glance. I dumped my clothes over the side of a cart and started down the aisles, grabbing only the absolute necessities. It hurt every day to wheel my meager collection past the coffee display, the aroma goading me, wrapping around me to remind me that nice things would never be a part of my life. Not as long as...
Keep it moving.
An armed guard barked in my ear, shoving me forward in the line. I used my grip on the basket to steady myself, knowing better than to say anything back or look his way. I kept it moving, like I'd been told. Weighed down with bags, I moved much slower leaving the market than I did on the way there. I glanced up at the sky, willing the sun to relax a little, not to run so fast to get behind the horizon, to turn everything dangerous and dark. I was ready to drop everything and run if necessary. It wasn't today. This time, when I sighed, it was out of relief to be on the right side of my locked front door, in the relative safety of home. Maybe I was being paranoid, but so far, that paranoia had kept me alive, and I saw no reason to change it. I stopped by the kitchen first, allowing the low, familiar hum of the old beat-up refrigerator to soothe me. I remembered the whole family eating light to afford the extra cost the week my father brought it home. But I'd never seen my mother smile so much. Now that they were gone, it had a dual utility, cold storage, and a warm memory. Once I had put away the groceries, I moved to my room, the main bedroom, which had been my parents. I hung my work clothes in the closet, then went to check the panel that monitored our electricity usage. Yet another thing that was rationed. A rare smile lit my face when I saw that my house was well under budget for the month, which meant I could indulge myself with a hot shower that lasted longer than 3 minutes. Maybe a whole 10. I mused to myself as I sat down on the end of the bed to take off my shoes and give my aching feet some relief. Or I should wait until the end of the week. It wasn't until I was putting my shoes in the closet that I realized something was off. I'd been so absorbed in my own thoughts that the overwhelming emptiness of the house hadn't struck me. It did now. Barefoot, I padded across the worn carpet and flung my door open, heading down the hall. I didn't stop moving until I reached another door, where I listened first. When I heard nothing, I knocked. When the knock went unanswered, my heart dropped. Where the hell is Nadia? I opened the door just to check, but I already knew she wasn't there. Panic gripped my chest as I looked around for a note, a clue, anything, but found nothing. I swallowed hard, choking down the disappointment of what I knew I had to do next. There goes that long shower. In fact, there went a lot of day-to-day comforts our meager ration of electricity afforded. I went back to the panel in my room, dreading the necessary but not putting it off. I had to make a call. When the new government took over, they'd confiscated any electronic that had a memory or storage. They called it anti-terrorism and had torn up homes and ended lives over cell phones and laptops. Eventually, citizens were given access again, but at a cost. Only the hyper-rich could afford the devices sold at Apex stores, and anyone caught making, selling, or owning a counterfeit was subject to prosecution. Persecution. And they made sure we knew. Instead of subjecting myself to those possibilities, I was content with the call function on the panel, monitored and recorded, and they ate up electricity like a vacuum. I rarely used the ability, largely because I didn't know many people to call. But now, with the sun long gone from the sky, and Nadia nowhere to be found, it was necessary. So I made the call. It took Gran a bit to answer because of the time. I knew I'd woken her up and felt bad about it. But I'd feel worse if I didn't do everything I could to figure out where the hell my sister was. "What happened?" she asked as soon as her face appeared on the screen. Momentarily, Nadia left my mind as I processed Gran's gaunt likeness. Before the illness, she'd been vibrant, full cheeks and full of life. Her face was hollow now, and her floral robe hung loose over bony shoulders. Just 2 days ago, I'd made the trek to see her in person and had fought to stay upbeat, to not let her see the impending doom I felt. Even more of the light was gone from her eyes now. "Are they giving you your treatments?" I asked, ignoring her question. Most of my peers at the salon lived somewhat worry-free lives, in the upper mids, the neighborhoods nearest the apex. They didn't worry about electricity or food or much crime. Unfortunately, that wasn't my life. My grandmother had already needed round-the-clock care when my parents were still alive. Between their two incomes, they could afford it, even though it was tight. They weren't here anymore. It was just me now, taking care of two other women, one elderly and sick, the other a near genius who needed to be in school. Just yesterday, she'd gotten a letter about a potential scholarship to finish her post-secondary schooling up in the Apex, which was huge. We couldn't ignore that. So Gran went to the retirement community, which I hated, but was cheaper than the private care she'd had before. It wasn't ideal.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?